just making sure everybody's awake.
There may be a few coming in, which is great to see. All right, you may proceed.
May it please the court, Christopher Reyes on behalf of appellant Sheila Somerville in this case. This is an issue of first impression before this court, and the specific issue in the case is whether Ms. Somerville released a noxious gas or a mixture of chemicals that created a gas or odor, causing injury thereby. But I think the broader issue that this court needs to address is whether pepper spray, as a matter of law, falls under 18.2312. Now, there is some discussion by the Court of Appeals and by the Commonwealth that we're not even sure if pepper spray was used in this case. But there's no doubt, and the evidence adduced at trial shows that it was pepper spray. Two canisters were collected. One of them, we can see, clearly says OC spray on it. That's oleoresin capsaicin. Detective Cameron testified that is pepper spray, the OC spray. The other one, we couldn't see what was in it. It says it's made by mace. But at the same time, we know that one of those was held by Ms. Somerville, the other was held by her associate. And at the time, she was convicted of solicitation as well as actually spraying the spray. So one of those was pepper spray. So that issue definitely needs to be addressed by this court.
Let me get to what I think is perhaps even an easier resolution, and you need to respond to it. Did you ever diagram sentences when you were in school?
Yes, sir.
It always helps me sometimes to diagram a statute to figure out what modifies what,
yes,
and get to the meaning. In this case, there's several ors, and then there's an and in there. And in order to find her culpable under 18.2312, she has to release whatever it is, and we'll get to that in a moment, in a public place. And it needs to be, I'll be more specific. It has to, under the statute, the trial judge observed, it has to be a gas or a mixture of chemicals. Now, that's true. That's what the statute says. What comes out of the vial or what is created according to the statute has to be, and this is also in the statute, an odor or a gas. If I go to Webster's, which is often a source of our definitions, it describes a mist, and the testimony in the case was this was a mist that was in the eyes. It describes a mist as a suspension of finely divided liquid in a gas. That's
yes,
what it
sir.
Says it is.
Absolutely. And so to address that point,
what part of this is the trial court missing? A mixture of chemicals. Certainly this, whatever this was, probably was pepper spray, is a mixture of chemicals. Testimony was the mist went into the eyes, and Webster describes and defines a mist as a suspension of finely divided liquid in a gas. So what is left in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't believe that that definition alone solves the problem. It is a finely divided liquid within a gas, and the liquid is the actual OC in this situation. It wouldn't be the aerosol that dispersed that liquid that caused the injury.
But isn't one of the standard chemistry definitions of a gas, is gas simply an atomized liquid?
No, it's not, actually. A gas is one of the phases of an element where it is actually the energy level of the particles is so high that they can't be bound in a liquid state or a solid state. Solid state is the lowest energy level. So in this situation, a liquid can be light enough that is elevated by a gas and propelled out. I think the way we need to look at this is if you take a atomizer that has, say, lemon juice in it, and you squeeze it, and it's so fine that that goes in someone's eye and that causes damage, is that something that the legislature intended to encompass in this? Because really, that's what we have here. We have this oleoresin capsaicin, which is then delivered by a gas. But it's not the gas itself. It's a liquid. That's what the definition is. It's a liquid with being carried by that gas. So it's still a liquid.
The statute doesn't require liquid. It just requires a mixture of chemicals.
That's correct. But if it's a mixture of chemicals, it has to create a gas, which it did not do, or an odor, and the gas created or the odor created has to be what caused the injury. That's specifically what it says. And if we look at what the trial court actually ruled, he ruled that it was an odor, and he thought there was enough evidence based on an odor causing injury to let it go to the jury. He said, yeah, I think the evidence shows it was more of a liquid than a gas. It's the odor that we're concerned about, and that's why we're going to the jury on this issue. And in fact, it wasn't an odor that caused the injury. We know it wasn't an odor that caused the injury because...
But the gas carried the atomized liquid under your theory.
Correct.
Well, then therefore the gas with its atomized liquid being carried in it caused the injury.
Well, no, it's not the gas, it's the liquid. If you spray the propellant on its own, that's not going to cause injury. It is the actual liquid that's being dispersed. If you have a spray bottle and it's finally misted it out, it's still a liquid. It's just, it's so light that it's not bound together and falling to the ground.
You know, your argument, I mean, obviously this would apply to what are called chemical warfare.
Absolutely.
Right, well, but if you take your argument a little bit farther, all of those things that are involved in chemical warfare are dispersed by a gas. And so the very purpose for the statute, at least one of the purposes, would be defeated by your definition of a gas.
Your Honor, I think that not all of the ones specifically laid out by the statute are dispersed by gas. Mustard gas is an actual gas. Phosgene gas is an actual gas. The Commonwealth addresses tear gas in that it's a solid that is dissolved in a gas. But that's specifically enumerated by the statute. I think what we have to look to is the purpose of this statute. It is a terroristic statute.
How can that be if it specifically lists private home?
Because I believe that it is a statute that is designed to prevent mass harm.
In a private home?
I believe so, yes. I mean, there can be more than one person in a home. And the problem I see with this statute encompassing a small canister of pepper spray is that it totally ignores where we find this in the statute. It is under the title of Crimes Against Health and Safety. It's not in the crimes against a person. It is designed, or the legislature purposely enacted it, to prevent a mass harm. It is more about a public space. Yes, it says a private home. I concede that. But I think that the issue is that it's designed to prevent mass harm. And these little canisters of pepper spray, that's not what they're designed to do. They're designed to repel one person at the most. We know there was another person involved in this, another loss prevention officer, who ran into the fray, smelled the pepper spray, and he wasn't injured at all. It said he coughed slightly, but he didn't seek medical treatment, and he was not injured.
Well, how do you address, it says, if any person does this, and if bodily injury results to any person? I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is, I mean, you are saying mass harm.
I think it
requires one person.
It does only require one person.
And one person to be harmed.
I don't disagree with that, but I think it is...
In a private home.
I think it is the risk of more people being harmed that this statute is trying to prevent. If you release it in a public place or a private home where more people are, if you release it and it's a gas that spreads rapidly, a lot of people can be injured. Whereas with this pepper spray canister, unless you direct it at individual people, they're not going to be mass harm. I think that's the issue in this case.
Can I circle you back to the semantics of tear gas? If gas, under your approach, necessarily excludes any atomized solids or any atomized liquids, wouldn't the expression tear gas be a contradiction in terms?
Yes, Your Honor, it would, absolutely. But I think that the legislature picked out tear gas specifically and included it in the statute, which they're allowed to do.
But when you say tear gas, any other noxious gases, you've got a very, very narrow interpretation of gas. I'm trying to figure out how it could possibly be in the same sentence as tear gas, which unless I'm overreading what you're saying, would be an oxymoron based upon your definition of gas. Do you understand what I'm trying to
say? I definitely understand what you're saying, and I think... I can't help but agree with you that it contradicts what I'm saying, but tear gas itself is very different from pepper spray on its own. Tear gas is dispersed in large canisters, and it is used for crowd control. And that could be a reason that the legislature specifically included it, even though it could be a contradiction to other things they are trying to not ban. So I think that would be the issue there. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
You have 4 minutes and 55 seconds.
Please, the court, Aaron Campbell, on behalf of the Commonwealth in this case. This case, I think the court's rightfully identified, is about defining things. And at the outset, so we're on the same page, let me address sort of the factual question here, whether this was, what was in the pink canister, was a mace or was it pepper spray? I don't think I'm in a position to concede that it was pepper spray, but for the purposes of this argument, I don't think it matters. So going forward, I'm going to just assume that with the appellant's argument that it was pepper spray and explain why I don't think that matters. There are basically two issues in this case. One, what is this substance? And two, did it cause a bodily injury? The most straightforward way to analyze this case is to just simply say that the plain meaning of tear gas would include pepper spray. Tear gas is actually not what the appellant would believe it to be. That what he is describing is CS gas, which is a type of tear gas. But if you look at the plain dictionary definition of tear gas, it includes it's a broad spectrum of things that includes many substances that cause tears, including CS gas, which is the stuff that we see police use grenades and throw it into a crowd, and there's smoke.
Well, if it's that broad, though, it really could include atomized lemon juice.
Perhaps.
That's awful broad, don't you think?
If it was designed to include it, perhaps. I'd have to think more about that. But under a traditional definition, it would be chemical compounds that temporarily make people blinded. We would submit that CS gas and OC spray fall under this umbrella. At least with this statute, there is an exception here at the end of the statute for police use and personal use. We would submit that it would make no sense to exclude OC spray from this statute when we have a personal defense exception here in the statute, and the most widely used personal defense device is pepper spray. Assuming the court doesn't want to say it's tear gas, I think at the very least it is a mixture of chemicals designed to and capable of producing vile, injurious, or nauseating odors or gases. We would submit that a mist is a gas. That I think the appellant's argument is he's trying to separate the liquid from the aerosol. I think that is too narrow of a definition of a gas. This is liquid particles that are dispensed through an aerosol that are suspended within a gas. We would submit that in itself is a gas under the statute and under a plain meaning of the statute. As to the second issue, whether or not this was a bodily injury that occurred from a gas or odor, certainly if we say that this is a gas, the victim, in this case a loss prevention officer, was hit in the face with the cloud of mist and experienced burning and tears. As whether or not if it wasn't a gas, I would submit also that the odor caused an injury. You had the other loss prevention officer testify that he experienced coughing just being around it. The trial court determined that certainly the victim in this case, the first loss prevention officer, would have probably experienced, it's reasonable to infer that he would have experienced a likewise reaction to it. I would also submit that the victim, the loss prevention officer, Houdin, also experienced tears. And as a common experience tells you that a strong odor would cause tears. We probably all had experiences of cutting onions and an odor causing someone to swell up. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that a reasonable fact finder could conclude that the victim experienced a bodily injury in this case. I would compare this mist to a steam that comes from a kettle when you're making tea. It is a liquid suspended in gas. And under the plain meaning of a mist, this would satisfy the statute here. We would ask that the court affirm.
All right. Thank you very much. Rebuttal?
Thank you. Just briefly about the steam comment. Steam is a gas. It's water that's been heated, a liquid that's been heated to such a state that it's excited to the gas phase. It is not liquid suspended in a gas. It is gas itself. And to address what Justice Kelsey was saying about the overbroadness of this statute that could be reached if you find that the pepper spray is a liquid suspended in a mist, is that we could fall, almost anything can fall under this statute if you atomize it and it causes some sort of irritation.
Actually, the statute requires that it be designed to produce an injury. How do you address that?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, if I take a lemon and I squeeze it in a bottle with malice and I intend to spray it in someone's eye, when I squeeze that lemon juice into the bottle,
it's not your intent. It's under the statute. I mean,
correct, Your Honor.
Pardon?
It's not my intent. It's designed, correct?
Right.
And that's what I'm trying to address. If someone squeezes lemon juice into a bottle specifically to spray it in someone's eye, it has been designed to cause injury, if that's what they did it for. Now, if it was squeezed into a bottle and someone else didn't know that, and they were using it to water plants or something, and someone else sprays it, then no, that wasn't designed for that reason. But if you could take anyone and they could atomize whatever they want with the purpose of hurting someone, and then it is designed to do that. So I don't think that negates that issue. It is still designed to do that, and it causes harm, and almost anything could fall under the statute. It's overbroad. And I think a bigger issue is, if you find that this pepper spray falls under this statute, people can be convicted of both the malicious wounding by caustic substance and this statute at the same time, without any sort of additional harm caused. And then we're creating someone who's been convicted of two Class 3 felonies for one action. And it would not be barred by the Blockberger test of double jeopardy. Someone could definitely be convicted of both of these at the same time. I think that this court needs to find that it doesn't fall under that.
Now, what's the element for the one that wouldn't be an element for the other?
The malicious wounding by caustic substance requires a caustic substance. This requires a noxious gas or mixture of chemicals. They're two distinct things. They're separate. Caustic means burning. Noxious gas is not necessarily caustic. They could be separate. Additionally, this statute does require it be in a private home, public place, or place of public gathering. So that would keep it separate too. So someone could be convicted undoubtedly of both of these under at the same time. And I think that's a harm that this court needs to prevent. It's not as if someone is getting off scot-free. They can still be convicted under the caustic malicious wounding by caustic substance. It's been found that pepper spray falls under that. I think that is the more proper statute that people should be charged under, and overbroad reading of this statute could cause additional harm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
All right.